This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me again, as he always is Matthew Rushing, but this week we have two very special guests with us. From the Department of Temporal Investigations, it's Dalmer and Lux Lee. Guys, I guess what they say is true about you. You're always on time.
Well, this week, anyway.
It's true.
All right, it's not Dalmer and Lux Lee. It is Drew and Mike. From Standard Orbit, our TOS show. Guys, we're glad to have you with us today on The Orb to do something that has been requested by a number of listeners, which is a crossover to discuss trials and tribulations.
Cool. I'm surprised that people would actually request to hear more of us. You'd think that once a week was pushing it as is, but...
Twice a week in your case.
Yeah.
Well, after this past week, people said, we can't get enough of Landru. You know, having him on every show on the network in 1 week is just not enough. We need it to bleed over into a second week.
I don't understand. When it rains, it pours. It is just, but it's a good pour. It's a pour of goodness, mm-hmm. of me. So that's good.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the episode with, Dax wearing less.
It's good. It's less.
It's very,
but
very
it's more.
Good. Exactly.
Wait, Matthew, are you saying you want Landru to wear less?
That
like
is absolutely not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I was worried
based
for
on
a
the
second
conversation
there, Julian.
I heard earlier. I thought for sure.
That was on the other side exactly of the orb, Mike, and I'll be appreciative if you would keep that there.
Sorry. I'm not familiar with these gamma quadrant rules and whatnot. Shouldn't it be anyway. The other side of the wormhole, right? No?
That's what she said.
Okay, anyway.
Now there really is your wormhole.
That line.
Oh, that's not Kira saying it. That's the intendant saying it.
She says that a lot, actually.
Oh, God. I'm glad I finished.
All right, guys,
DS9, so I know what you're talking about.
Let's jump into the episode here before this goes any further off the rails or out of the wormhole or whatever you call it here on the orb. Trials and Tribulations was done as the 30th anniversary tribute to Star Trek by Deep Space Nine. And I think it's anyone watching it today, I think, understands that, but as we get further away, you know, we're almost 20 years away now from when this happened. The tendency now is to just view it as it's that Deep Space Nine episode where they go back to the trouble with Tribbles, and it's really cool. And you forget the context of when it was being developed and when the rumors were flying, and Voyager was doing their own 30th anniversary show at the same time with Flashback, and how exciting it was and how groundbreaking it was to put the characters into this episode. It was right around the same time as Forrest Gump, and I was just watching it again last night to prepare for this, and I'm just like seeing Odo sitting in the background, and it's so seamless. So first of all, what do you guys remember if we take ourselves back to when this was done in 1996? What did you think about it when it very first came out?
I remember everything about this episode. It was, I don't know if it was my first Deep Space Nine episode, but it was the only episode that I ever watched live on TV. And I remember, I didn't have access to the internet at the time, but one of my friends was a librarian, and she heard about it, and she announced it to me, basically, by printing out a sheet of the smallest thumbnails that you can imagine of all the crew and all the just all the little preview images of the TOS images. And she was really excited about me being excited about it. And so that night, I remember my stepdad and I sitting close to the TV after my little brothers went to bed. And it was like one of those mono TVs with the dials. Like,
oh yeah,
even this was the late 90s, and we're still rocking a TV from the 80s. But, you know, we were sitting up close to it, and I watched the whole thing, and I appreciated that they flat out, like, Dulmer and Luxley flat out ask, whatever their names are, they flat out ask, what's an orb? Like, everything that you need, you don't need to have seen Deep Space Nine to really follow along. Because it's more of the characters appreciating the past and Kirk's era and stuff. And I really enjoyed it, even though I had not seen any Deep Space Nine at the time. And I loved it. I still love it.
Yeah, I agree. I also saw it when it first came out. I was way into Star Trek at that point in time. And I was way into Deep Space Nine at that point in time. And I remember, you know, all the hoopla surrounding it when it came out. They had specials on the making of and everything, and talking about scanning the film and using the Forrest Gump technology and whatnot. And I remember the day that it aired, you know, here in Chicago, they aired on like Saturday afternoons at like 4:30. It was ridiculously stupid time slot. But I made a big deal out of it. I went over to my aunt's house. She was kind of the one who introduced me to Star Trek. We watched The Trouble with Tribbles right beforehand, and then we, you know, watched Trials and Tribulations, and I thought it was awesome, and I still think it's awesome. And you were saying, like, at the time, it was for the 30th anniversary and everything, and people don't really see it like that anymore. And one of the great things about this episode is it doesn't need to be that. You know, there doesn't need to be any excuse for why this thing was made or when this thing was made. It just stands up as a great episode of Deep Space Nine. And in a lot of ways, I think it's maybe the single best episode of Deep Space Nine. I feel kind of bad saying that because it is so gimmicky. Like, even, you know, I mean, I know, like, Ira Steven Behr has said, like, oh, you hear people say, like, Trials and Tribulations or Far Beyond the Stars or whatever is their favorite episode. And it's like, yeah, those were great. But what about the ones that were actually Deep Space
about
Nine,
Deep Space
you
Nine.
Know? and I mean, I do think that the 10-part arc that ends the series is better. But as far as like just one episode, I think this is the best. And I, you know, divorcing it from the gimmick, it still works as like a brilliant episode. And that's what makes it stand apart from something like Flashback. Yeah. But yeah, you know.
Well,
I'm sure we'll get to that, Mike.
And I've said this before. I'm pretty sure, Matthew, you and I have talked about this before on here, that touching on this episode, that it amazes me that they're able to center this episode around the original series episode. Yet it's a Deep Space Nine story. It still feels like this is a Deep Space Nine story. They're able to use the orb. They don't need to come up with any kind of crazy technological explanation for how they got back there in the first place. And there's enough story there, too, with the other characters that it still feels like Deep Space Nine.
One and two, Chris, you know, I completely agree. And on top of that, you know, Flashback was actually shown first to people. It came out September 11th. This comes out in November it was actually first aired November 4th. So everybody had already seen Flashback. They'd already seen what Voyager had put out. Flashback's fine, but it really doesn't hold a candle to what the team at Deep Space Nine and the writing staff was able to come up with, because, you know, Voyager's episode feels completely like a gimmick, and it doesn't feel like a Voyager episode. It just feels like we're trying to cram these two things together, and it doesn't work. It feels a little bit more like, the attempt in Generations to put Kirk with Picard, and it just mm-hmm. it feels very forced. Now, I love Generations too. I love Flashback. It's all Star Trek, but there's something so seamless and beautiful about the way that Deep Space Nine and the original series fit together, and I think it's because you can see the genuine love that the writers for Deep Space Nine have for the original series, and the way that they feel about it comes across on screen, especially in the character of Dax, who is kind of basically the geek in all of us that's on the freaking Enterprise with James T. Kirk and Spock, right? And Scotty and everybody else. You know, she's freaking about the patent leather and the highlights of chrome.
I
and
love
everything.
That I classic mean, 23rd century design.
Exactly. And so like her, as we watch the episode, we're all completely lost in the love of the silliness, but the greatness of TOS. And, it like Mike says, I think you're completely right. This works without needing a reason for it to be there. We don't need to know that it was an anniversary. What they've done is just create a fantastic episode of their own show that also pays homage to the history that's come before. And that's a really special thing. I mean, as anybody who's watched TV knows, you know, that's a tough thing to do, especially if you're a sequel to another series that's come before you. And it's really unique in a lot of ways. And so it's a really well done episode. And I remember that time because I was huge in Deep Space Nine. It had become
my
favorite series.
You sound like Dax right now. You sound like, you guys, I lived in that time.
Yeah.
That's the difference between you and me.
Yeah. I remember being there and being so excited that they were going to do this because I had fallen in love with TOS and the TOS movies. And then I didn't really watch a ton of The Next Generation, but I got into Deep Space Nine and it became my Star Trek. So the fact that they were going to marry the two things that I loved the most about Star Trek together was fantastic.
Well, Mike and Drew, you guys talk to us about the concept itself from the TOS perspective of bringing this future crew back into an episode of yours as the standard orbit TOS guys and how it was actually executed.
It was like they had to rebuild a lot of the sets, you know, the glorious sets that have now been rebuilt like, you know, three times by, you know, 100 different fans since then. But they managed to put them, like, add new doorways and stuff so that the characters are behind the main characters. I mean, that had to have been 90s technology, sure, you know, the Forrest Gump technology, but Forrest Gump is running on a, you know, feature film budget and doesn't stand up as well. Its effects don't stand up as well as this television show, I don't think. Like, they managed to, you know, cut out Kirk when he walks in front of people. There's a couple, like, when Dax is on the bridge and the camera is moving as she's walking mm-hmm. down the stairs, it doesn't feel right. And some shadows that are a little weird. But other than that, like, you have to be looking. And I've seen the episode so many times, and I now look for those things, wondering how they're going to do those for remastered, because they're going to have to basically start from scratch for the whole episode. Like, here's this blue screen shot, and we've got to put it and match it up with this. And are they going to use remastered, or are they going to go back to the original film again to do this? I don't know. I'm excited to see what they do when they get there in, what, 6 years?
Well, aren't most of the elements in this episode remastered already? This was like a trial to see. This is actually what got them thinking that, you know, we actually can remaster TOS.
Yeah, but they used the model ships and stuff that, unfortunately, they didn't use for remastered for some reason.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Well, I do remember, like, because they like I was saying, they had, you know, a thing on TV or whatever talking about the making of the episode, because they made a big deal out of this, obviously. And I do remember them talking about how they went back to the original film elements and rescanned them at a much higher resolution. And, like, the example which someone, some... effects person pointed out, which now I cannot not see whenever I'm looking at him, is they're like, yeah, you know, like we ran into some problems. Like you can see like a big coffee stain on Spock's uniform. And it's like, thanks, dude. Now all I can see is a big coffee stain on Spock's uniform. You know, so they did definitely rescan elements for this. So, I mean, yeah, they probably are going to have to rescan them again because I'm sure they didn't do it at HD resolution back in 1996.
They should have made it a thing like when Odo stopped wearing his belt, and then in Crossfire, Kira said, oh, what happened to your belt? And they put it into the episode. They should have put it in here where someone comes up to Spock and goes, is that a Ractigino stain on your uniform? Yep.
Well, it is going to be hard. You're right, Drew, in the sense that they didn't create the CGI model for the K7 and the Enterprise in the resolution that we would have now. So that is something they had to redo, although they already have the TOS remastered Enterprise, I'm sure, ready. They would just have to recreate or upgrade K7 that they had created and the Klingon warship. And so, but at the same time, this is the kind of episode, you know, they've been doing the special standalones for TNG, you know, like the two-parters. I think this is probably the episode that you spend the money on to create the big DVD, you know, the big Blu-ray release standalone of Trials and Tribulations, and you put a lot into it. And like you said, there's going to be a lot of fans that would want this because it is such a standalone episode. You can watch this outside of Deep Space Nine, have ever seen it, and still very much appreciate what's happening.
Here's what they do for the 50th anniversary. They redo that first, and flashback, and Trouble with Tribbles. Just put the Trouble with Tribbles from the Blu-ray in there, and somehow go back to the original animation for more Troubles, more Tribbles, more Tribbles, more whatever that episode's called.
That's what, yeah.
And
more
redo
Tribbles, more
that
Troubles
special disc, but add flashback, yeah, and make it an anniversary,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you could do that.
Put relics in there too.
Yeah, get rid of flashback and relics. I mean, it's, but in terms of, yeah, like, you know, since the other ones are two, you know, usually two-parters put together or whatever, yeah, I mean, that's the two-parter, Trouble with Tribbles and Trials and Tribulations. Maybe they do that thing that people say they should do, not me, but people, where, you know, you stick the elements from the Deep Space Nine episode into the Trouble with Tribbles, you know.
Edit them both together into, like,
sure,
a feature-length thing.
One big Tribble.
Yeah, you could definitely do that, and that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that personally. Like, when I watch The Trouble with Tribbles now, I always imagine in my head what else is going on behind the scenes, which is the great thing about how they did Trials and Tribulations, is that they did it so, so well that even when Kirk is sitting there and the tribbles are falling on his head,
yes,
I always know that Jadzia is up there throwing tribbles at him.
No, but yes. See, he's not. He's not, though. That's the thing. That's the problem with it, is because of the way that the thing works, right? You follow the timeline through the original series up to Trials and Tribulations, and then it changes. So in the original series, if you're watching them in chronological order, there is no, you know, Sisko up there. It's not until afterwards. It's on your original series rewatch after you've finished Deep Space Nine. Then he's in there. So you need both.
Wait, but wouldn't it be a time loop? I mean, they're always there because they're always part of the story now.
Not necessarily. In a post-JJ world, we can't go back to time loops. We've got to... Each time incursion starts a new timeline.
Exactly. It's a new timeline.
How do we know we're not living in an alternate timeline right now?
I'm sure we are, right?
Great.
I'm just going to quote lines from the episode at random all the way through the show.
Good, because we don't like those either.
Oh, goodness. But as far as a Blu-ray release you guys are talking about, I would also love to see them do special extras for this, like they've, you know, done for some of the episodes. Have a writer's roundtable. Get everyone back and talk about, you know, the ideas they had that they didn't go with, how this one got developed, all new material, And they could really put together an amazing disc of this.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more about how they came up with the idea and the execution of it, because it just seems so perfect. Like, and it's written, you know, like I said, I didn't know anything about Deep Space Nine, but I was able to follow it. I think that it's a gem. Like, I really want to learn more about how it came about. Like, had they done a piece of the action planet, you know, with them all being Trekkies, it would take a lot of, like, talked about, oh, this must have been this planet that Kirk found in that one episode that most people like, but most people don't remember. But, like, with Trouble with Tribbles, you go, Tribbles, and everybody's like, oh, Tribbles.
Yeah. Plus, I think if they had gone with the idea of playing off of a piece of the action, which is something they did consider, I think that would have felt more like the gimmick episode, whereas this one just feels
very... Yeah, why would Deep Space Nine... Organic. Why would the guys from Deep Space Nine go
right
to this planet that Kirk mapped on because the other side of the galaxy?
Because the Cardassians had been occupying a planet full of Trekkies and forcing Trekkies to sit around and dig up Star Wars action figures. And... people were really, really sick of that, and they needed to be liberated, and so...
You mean the Star Trek Wars?
Yes.
No, that was the Star Wars Trek.
The Star Wars Trek is what they went on to get there, and then when they got there, it was the Star Trek Wars.
Yeah. So you guys are all some kind of astronauts on some kind of Star Trek.
We're just to talk about each crossover now.
Well, let's talk about our favorite moments. I think that's what we should do for maybe the rest of the show. We'll see where things go. There are just so many gems in here. We've already talked about Dax wearing less, but...
Oh, we can keep talking about that. I mean, that's a good conversation right there.
Yeah, I think we talked about that on the other side of the orb, right?
But yeah.
For quite a while. one of my other favorite Dax moments, though, and Sisko moment, is when they're on the bridge... And Jadzia is trying to remember who Dr. McCoy is.
Yes.
And then she's like, ah, yes. And she tells Sisko the story about Imani. And she says he had the hands of a surgeon. And she's looking at him with these dreamy eyes. But then when they cut to Sisko, the expression that Sisko gives her is like, oh my gosh.
Well, and it's so funny because you just kind of been following this progression of Jadzia moments, you know, where she's been geeking out. And I love when she's like, maybe we should beam over to the station and help Miles and Julian look. And he's like, yeah. No, I don't think so. But we might bump into Koloth. And he's like, I know, that's exactly why we're not going. And she's like, ugh.
Oh, but it'd be just fun.
And he maybe and he's like, too much fun. And the way he grabs her hand and guides her into the turbo lift and then grabs her hand again as they get back in it is just, it's so cute because their relationship is such that he can completely understand why, you know, she's so excited because he knows Curzon and he understands, he's known Curzon. He understands so much her connection to this time period. And why he wants to meet somebody like, you know, Kirk or Spock. And so I just really appreciate that because it feels very real in the way that Chris, we talked to Greg Cox on Literary Treks this week and Seven meeting Kirk for the first time in the novel. But Janeway has always been a huge Kirk fan. So just imagine, you know, Kirk is a legend and that legend has lived on. And just as much as we all want to meet him as fans, you know, he has his fan base in Starfleet because he's the most famous captain, you know, to ever have traveled the stars. And who wouldn't want to meet him and Spock and McCoy and the rest of his gang? Because they're the ones who, you know, set the bar, I think, in Starfleet of what it meant to be a crew in Star Trek. What we think of in that Federation. And I think that's what really resonates throughout the whole episode, and especially in that character of Jadzia, which is really special because it we feel like we're a part of the episode because we are her.
Right. What I also like in the lift there, when he says, when he addresses her at the end, he just says, Dax. And I know he calls her Dax a lot anyway, but in that moment when he says it, I feel like he's talking to the symbiont. Like, I know what part of you wants to go over and see Koloth. And it's right. Not Jadzia. It's Dax. It's like, just calm down, Dax. Calm down, old man.
Just calm the heck down.
The best line for me in terms of all that is when she says, but it's Captain Kirk, because I don't know how many times I've said that exact line, I think probably prior to this episode coming out. And it's just like every time I see that, I'm like, that's exactly, I know exactly what you mean there, Dax. I know exactly what you mean. You know, it's like the perfect line reading too. But yeah,
well, and
it is. You feel like Terry Farrell was the biggest Star Trek fan mm-hmm. ever and the biggest Kirk fan ever, the way she delivers those lines. It's just so, it's so genuine. Like, she's really, really thrilled to be walking down these corridors from the original series. And I, as far as I know, that's not necessarily the case, but she pulls it off. It's just so completely believable.
That's one of the reasons why Jadzia is, you know, the best character on yeah. on the show. You know, she has that quality to her personality, you know, and it really, you know, shines through on throughout the entire series. And here, you know, I mean, you see that on Deep Space Nine when she's just interacting with her friends and stuff like that. But here, you know, this is like she's at, you know, her Star Trek convention, really, you know, and she's totally geeking out, you know, as she would. And it's a great extension of her personality on the whole, you know.
I love the scene in the turbo lift with Miles and Julian, where Julian thinks that basically he needs to be his own grandfather because only Julian could think like this.
right. And it's all those spy movies that he watches.
Oh my gosh!
Or
and the scene between them, he's like, "Great, just wait until we get back to the station, and I don't exist," you know. And the chuckle that Colmeny gives is just right. fantastic. It oh my gosh, it's perfect. It's amazing.
Miles is the highlight of the episode to me, for not just because I'm the Miles to your Julian, Matt, but because he's this, you know, big, he's not an engineer, but you know, he's this, the big tech guy, and he like opens up a panel and he just stares at it. Cause he's like, I don't know what to do. This whole thing's just patched together. I don't get it. And then, like, get into the turbo lift, and he's like, I don't know how this works. It's like neither of them took any history classes, or, like, you know, if you walked up to a computer, you know, from, you know, 100 years ago, not 100 years ago, because computers aren't that old, but you'd figure out how it works. But I guess, Scotty is more further apart when he's, you know, hello, computer. So he's like 400 years away from that computer, 300 years.
Right.
And they're only like 100 years away, and they can't figure it out. Like, I don't know how this turbo lift works. I don't know how to make it go.
Just
watching them stumble around the ship is just classic.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think you have to hold a handle when you get in, right?
I love, too, that woman who plays Whatley just is just completely into Julian. Like, I'm coming in for my physical tomorrow. 1500 Lieutenant Whatley. And she's like, it's like, oh my gosh, are they going to like go into the on-call room? Is this Grey's Anatomy? What the heck?
But see, that was like you were talking about, you know, the scene in the turbo lift and how it was only Bashir would think that. And it's because of his, you know, spy paranoia, whatnot. I always just assumed it was him trying to come up with an excuse to, you know, get it on with her, right? And that's how I read it. And also, I don't know whether or not this was intentional, but I mean, she's one of the few characters from that time period who, you know, we actually interact with, you know, who's, you know, a new character. And her performance to me seems like, she's like, her line readings and everything almost seem like kind of like 60s style acting.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if that was intentional or if I'm just reading too much into it.
No, I mean, I think that it was intentional because it needs to fit into the story. Like, she was there in the original episode, but we didn't see her. But she does completely nail it. I mean, you would think that she was actually there exactly as she appeared in 1996, back when they shot the original episode.
Mm-hmm.
More so than the waitress. The waitress came off pretty well also, but the waitress still... There you felt like, okay, they've dressed her up to look like she was there. And it doesn't quite work as well, but Lieutenant Whatley, spot on.
Well, and the way that she plays it too, and the fact that, you know, you're coming from the 60s, you're in a time period where the show is kind of like sexually loose in the sense that it plays with that a little bit more than, strangely enough, than you know, modern Trek has. And the idea that people just kind of, you know, they find somebody they like and then, you know, they do it. Cause Kirk does. So, I mean, even though and John Tenuto would get on me if I didn't say this, but, you know, Kirk usually has a reason for trying to win over the lady, and it usually has something to do with the story, luckily. So he's not just a Lothario.
Right. Now, Riker also would do it, and Riker also has a reason, which is that she was really hot.
Exactly. Yeah. Riker just...
or
just
androgynous.
Just to perfect the Riker maneuver.
Or Frasier's wife.
Yeah.
Well, there he actually had a reason, though. He had to escape.
Yes.
She didn't even help. Oh, God. I'll never forget watching that episode the first time. Before my first ready room, I was going to make the joke that, oh, I watched the wrong First Contact. And so I watched that episode, and I was just like...
I think you did make that joke, didn't you?
I did.
Yes.
But I did actually watch that episode, and I was like, what? Really? Maybe if you sleep with me, I'll help you escape. What? Really? Oh, and he did. Oh. What is with this show?
Did. It's Riker.
Yeah, classic Riker.
What do you guys think about the barroom scene, though? I love it when, because there's so many gems in that, in the barroom there, but when the officers walk in and there's the guy with Chekhov and all, but there's the other just crewman of the Enterprise, and they're convinced that's Kirk. God, there he is. There's
Kirk. Which was Shatner's stand-in. So it's kind of like from the back, he does look like Kirk.
Yeah.
Maybe from where they were sitting, he was in shadow, just like he is when he's doing stand-in stuff.
And to me, it's the scene where Miles and Julian walk in and like, oh, so this is how you conduct an investigation. Yes, that really important clue about the Ractigino. I like how that's just kept you in this bar all day drinking.
No, my favorite is Odo and Worf about the Tribble. It's like, they're plagued to be wiped out. Do they still sing songs of the great Tribble hunt?
Yes, it's so perfect.
And that is
the
like
best
sort of
expression, though, with Worf and the Tribble, is when they all look at Worf. Like, those are Klingons, and they all look, and he just has this blank expression on his face, like, I'm busted. Mm-hmm. What do I say?
But that's a great explanation, too, you know, because you do need to deal with it, you know, especially when you're have a show which is filled with Klingons, you know, you can't just ignore it. You know, usually in Star Trek, you can ignore it because you're talking about something which isn't on screen. But here, you've got to deal with it head on, no pun intended, and or off. And you just say, hey, we don't talk about it. There.
I always like that explanation, although a lot of fans have pointed out that by making that joke in the first place, it was an acknowledgement that this is a subject that needs to be addressed in the first place, beyond just, we had more money for the motion picture, and it opened up a whole can of worms. And actually the explanation, not the explanation, but the ideas that that Miles and Jules especially have here about, you know, what happened, some kind of mutation, some kind of genetic engineering, actually is what gets picked up in Enterprise. So they really did.
Did they deliberately write the explanation to their guesses?
I don't think
or
they
was
saw
that just a coincidence?
I don't think the writers of Enterprise saw Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I've never thought so, but as I was watching it last night, I was thinking, you know, they did set all that up right here.
No, but you see, know, that's the thing.
Not setting it up like they thought someone needed to pick it up later, but just simply the subject matter was put in here.
Anybody who would have picked it up would have been Manny Coto in his magic bag of hindsight. And yeah. I honestly think that he did watch this episode and used some of those explanations that they came up with, because you're right. It's exactly what they talked about. It's genetic manipulation and augmentation. It's exactly what happens in the episode. And personally, it's what makes the most sense in the Enterprise episode is the fact that that's what the Klingons were trying to do, because it just fits with all that we know about Klingons and trying to one up the Federation and thinking that they're going to be taken over by, you know, augmented humans. Well, we need to do the same thing, but Klingons really aren't scientists, so why wouldn't they just steal the information and try it on themselves? I mean, it all fits together very well with the meta narrative of the whole of Star Trek. And so, and in the end, it fortuitously works together. Were they thinking that anybody's going to pick this up in 20 years and try and do it on a TV show? No. It's just a funny line. It's a throwaway.
Okay. And I mean, they don't, isn't there like another thing that they talk about? They don't just say like genetic engineering, like they throw out a number of ideas, right? Like, was it this? Was it this? Right?
A plague mm-hmm. or like genetic engineering gone wrong.
But that's what happens at Enterprise. The genetic engineering goes wrong, yeah. And then there's a
it
plague.
It becomes a plague.
But
it
to becomes me, a plague. To yeah. me, what that line was, and the reason why I don't think that like the writers of Deep Space Nine were like, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. I think Deep Space Nine were doing were pulling all of the ideas which fans had been talking about, you know, because you've got the fans for, you know, at that point, a good 17 years saying, what could it be? Could it be this? Could it be this? And what, you know, Bashir and O'Brien or whoever it is who are in there are doing is they're the voice of the fans. Like, finally, we're going to get an explanation. And Worf's just like, no, you're not. No, sorry. No. Doesn't matter.
It's very much like the opening of season 3 of Sherlock, where they how does Sherlock survive, and they do this whole like 3 or 4 different ways that he survived, and they're all just fan theories that have been on a line that you know Moffat has picked up mm-hmm. and basically
and
just said
says,
we're yeah nope, it doesn't matter nope. how I survived no yeah. It's not how it happened. So yeah, I can completely get that. I just think that it is something that when they decided to do the whole augmentation episodes in Enterprise, I really do think probably that Coto had watched this episode because it's the only place it is talked about Star Trek. And you would had to have referenced the idea. And so what does he do? He kind of takes every single one of those and shows the way that those did actually play
all
out.
All of you fans were exactly. right. You just didn't exactly. put all of your theories together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he watched the episode to make sure, you know, that he wasn't contradicting anything or whatnot, but I really do think that he came up with his own explanation, and the fact that it's so similar to what they say in Deep Space Nine is just a result of the fact that everyone was saying that for like a good, you know, 20 years, you know. So.
Well, and it's kind of the way that the Khan comics that just came out, you know, everybody pretty much figured out that the reason that Benedict Cumberbatch didn't look like Khan Noonien and Singh that we know from the original series is because he had plastic surgery. Well, in the comic, that's exactly what happens, because really that's the only good explanation for what's happened. And so they're just kind of giving you what you already knew.
No, it's damage control. What you already know is the reason it's why it's control. Benedict yeah. Cumberbatch is because he was a much better actor than anyone else. And then they're like, well, why would he be white? Plastic surgery. Write that down. Write that down right now.
Well, I mean, they had to explain it. Benicio del Toro, and uh-huh. it didn't work out for him to shoot at the right time. So, right. And it wasn't like they weren't planning on going that way.
He was too busy ruining the middle of the Thor credits. I don't understand.
Talking about these elements.
Thor was
here,
already crap anyway.
But. Talking about these elements here with Into Darkness, did you guys watch the deleted scene that just was uncovered? I think it was only available on Xbox or something, and Trent Corr got it, but with Alice, Eve, and Kirk. Yeah. And Kirk says, okay, you can drop the accent now. And she's like, no, this is real. My father was stationed in London and la-da-da-da-da. I'm like, okay, that's also damage control.
Well,
right?
No, yeah. That actually was originally in the script.
No, I know, but written in the script, it's like preemptive damage control for the fans who are going to say, why does Carol Marcus have a British accent?
Right, I remember saying that to you guys before the movie came out.
And I don't know, maybe her voice sounds quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, she was hot. What did it matter?
Yeah, I was going to say.
She took her clothes
off. She can have all the accent she wants.
She wore less than Jadzia in this episode that we forgot we were talking about.
Well, back to Trials and Tribulations here. What else stands out to you in this episode that has stuck with you through the years, that really makes the episode shine? It's the thing that you go and you tell your friends, like, you have to watch this episode because of this.
Everything.
I think it's really the way that the technology works to make a seamless episode, especially that last scene there where Kirk meets Sisko.
And isn't that awesome? Isn't it great, though, that Sisko is sitting there and telling Dahmer and Luxley that there's one more thing.
Yeah.
And then it's like the biggest thing that's going to make them fall off
their
chairs. I
totally interacted with the most important historical figure of the last 150 right. years.
Well, and then it's great because they both kind of admit, as much as they have hated him because of his incursions, that they probably would have done the same thing. Which, again, is that fan service of, we all know that you would like to meet Kirk in this time period. Wouldn't we all want to meet Kirk? And Sisko is representative of all of us. And I think it really ties the episode together because it does a great job of celebrating all that is Star Trek and all that makes it fun. And, you know, Deep Space Nine in a lot of ways was not known for being the series that was fun. And yet it's the one that gave us probably the most fun episode ever created for Star Trek, which is this episode right here. And that these characters themselves were really funny. I mean, the way that Avery Brooks plays this, the way that Terry Farrell plays this, like you said, Chris, she's not the biggest TOS fan, but you would never know that from this episode. You would think she was. The way that Sadig is playing this and the way that Coleman's playing this, everyone is on top of their game here and delivering a really funny, really poignant performance. And I think it's because all of them, whether they were a fan or not, they knew what this was going to mean, and they knew what this was going to mean in the future. And I think, Chris, this is what we talk about on The Orb a lot, and I think I've probably said this many times, but Deep Space Nine is meta. It is myth. And Deep Space Nine bought into the myth of TOS and its mythology and its reverence, whereas, you know, Roddenberry was afraid of that with TNG. The guys on Deep Space Nine realized we can't be afraid of that. In fact, we need to embrace it wholeheartedly. And that's why they reference things in Deep Space Nine that don't get referenced in TNG. I mean, you hear about Andorians in the background. You hear about all these races that you heard about in the original series, the Orions, all this stuff. And it's the only one that really connected us back to TOS in such a concrete way. I mean, Janeway might talk about Kirk, but Sisko meets Kirk.
It's, to me, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. And just to kind of expand on that, there was a thing that was definitely going on back when Deep Space Nine was on where people were like, this isn't real Star Trek. It's not on a ship. These people are dark and, you know, they don't, you know, there's conflict and whatnot. And it's going against what Roddenberry's ideals were. And what was kind of blatantly obvious to anyone who actually watched the show is that it really embodied the spirit of the original series more than any other of the spinoffs. And this episode to me is just sort of like a perfect representation of that. It's like them saying, and also what you were saying about it being, you know, a dark show, when in reality, if you watch it, you're like, oh, obviously this is the funniest show of them all. You know, even though it does go to really dark places, it also goes to really light places, and it does a really good job of contrast. And whereas everything else in the Enterprise is just gray, or Voyager is just gunmetal blue, you know, or whatever it is. And Deep Space Nine really understood what Trek was, what the original series was, and it knew it so well that it didn't have to copy it each and every week. But if you look at just this one episode, it becomes blatantly obvious that these guys definitely had a handle on the franchise, and definitely better than any other group of creators that worked on Trek.
Well, and I think in some ways too, they do that thing that Meyer was able to do with Star Trek II and Star Trek VI and everything that he had a hand in the movies. He was able to craft from what had happened the kind of the thing that you would always thought of as Star Trek and bring that into fruition. You know, even though you might not have thought about that in the beginning, you know, so the way that he takes it. You know, he's not a Star Trek fan really at the beginning. He's a guy who comes in and rewrites a script really quickly and does a great job, but is able to somehow, some way, find the voice of these characters and craft some of the best Star Trek we've ever seen. Star Trek II and Star Trek VI are my favorite Star Trek films. Star Trek VI is my all-time favorite Star Trek film. I could watch it anytime, anywhere. It's because of the way that he gets what this is. And those Deep Space Nine writers really do that with Deep Space Nine, and they get Star Trek. And Mike, you're completely right. And I think that's, for me, the thing that I resonated with it the most, is because after going from watching a bunch of TOS and reruns to not really seeing a lot of TNG, but then jumping into Deep Space Nine, something clicked. And I was like, yep, this is Star Trek.
Landru, you watched DS9 fairly recently for the very first time. Now, this episode you had seen before, but otherwise you watched it. Coming from TOS, did you feel these things that the three of us feel as well, that you see all the little nods to the original series just kind of sprinkled throughout DS9?
Yeah, I do. I think they even mentioned the Tholians, or like Tholian space at some point.
They do.
Which is a neat reference. I am noticing now, going through Next Generation, slowly but surely, and it's not grabbing me like Deep Space Nine did, so I'm just watching a couple episodes at a time. But TNG does try to stay really far away from TOS elements, except for Romulans. There's a lot of Romulans so far in the first, you know, two and a half seasons I've seen. But yeah, I can see that the writers of Deep Space Nine liked TOS, and I appreciate that. I appreciate their calls to it. I really like in this particular episode that each one of the crew members seems to represent a different layer of Trekdom, like of fandom. We've got Worf, who doesn't even want to get involved, and really nobody questions his involvement. No, he gets there. Never mind. I forgot that Worf actually showed up. That was the whole point. Kira. So we've got Kira, who stays on the ship and doesn't give a crap. And then we've got Worf, who's embarrassed to be there because someone's eventually going to ask him why he's there and why he looks like that. And then we've got Odo, who's just kind of an observer and not really interacting much. And then we got Miles and Julian, who know the basics of this series, but don't really know how it works. And then we've got Cisco, who knows everything about it, but is trying to keep his cool, trying to be calm, trying not to be super nerdy. And then there's Dax, who's just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
That's a very good observation, yeah.
And I appreciate that the writers were fans and made the characters fans, because I think that's what speaks to me most about this episode, is that it's not just fan service, because the characters seem like they are also fans of what's going on. Not like Flashback, where it's just like, okay, we're in Suvok's memories somehow, and now his memories can see me because memories.
Because memories. I like that. All right, guys. Well, I'm glad you could join us today to talk about this episode. It's always fun. You know, Matthew and I, we geek out over DS9 every single week. You guys geek out over the original series every single week. So I'm glad we could come together. Before we go, tell everyone where they can find you guys on the network and elsewhere on the interwebs and all that stuff.
Well, you can find us both on Standard Orbit, which comes out on Mondays here on the network. I think we've got some good stuff in store for you. So keep checking it out as you have. And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find Mike pretty much everywhere else in the world. Mike?
Yeah, I'm on the commentary Trek Stars, which is on Fridays, where we look at the stuff that Star Trek creators have done outside of Star Trek. Right now we're talking about Cliff Bull's work on The X-Files. And I also do a commentary Trek Stars Off Topic with Max and my friend Brandon, where we talk about whatever we want to talk about. And this year, we are reliving 1999, the year in movies. So if you want to follow along with us, head on over to commentarytrackstars.com. And I'm on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
Very good. All right. Thanks again, guys. Well, Matthew, I'm so glad the guys could join us today to talk about Trials and Tribulations. And it was nice. I mean, we laugh a lot here on The Orb, but our topics are generally rather serious. So it was really fun to just cut loose today with the best fun episode of DS9, one of the best fun episodes of Star Trek ever produced.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Chris. This really is a fantastic episode. Like you, we have done this actually on the Ready Room. Some of you want to look that up. We talked to Larry and got a lot of the behind the scenes. But I think this was a great episode of just talking about it from both perspectives, you know, TOS fans, Deep Space Nine fans, and really just kind of getting into that and really enjoying all that the episode gave us as fans, because it really gave us a lot, and obviously gave us lots of love, and so it was so much fun to get to talk about this episode, and I love having any excuse to sit down and watch Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, Matthew, you mentioned that episode we did on the Ready Room with Larry, and it's actually episode 93, if anyone wants to go back and listen to it. It's called 3-Inch Heels and a 6-Inch Hairdo, and it's great. You know, Larry wrote back in the day when they were making Trials and Tribulations, he wrote a very extensive piece for Communicator behind the scenes, everything that was going on. So we talk a lot about that on there. So go check that out, too. It's a great supplement to the discussion we had here today on The Orb. But these aren't the only things that we've been talking about here on the network over the past week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Where no man has gone before, comic versus episode.
They talk about how we just picked up this psychiatrist from Alderaan.
Alderaan. Let's just call it Alderaan.
Earl Grey.
All good things.
In a universe where Troy is dead, the Enterprise D lives on. That's all I want to say. It's the only thing that matters.
The Ready Room.
Simple defense.
Dukat recorded messages, obviously, for a lot of different scenarios. Isn't it funny to think of him, like, you know, whatever, 10 years before this episode, like, you know, putting a day aside. It's like, I have to sit in front of a camera and just think of ways they could screw us.
The orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept, okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, tell me what to do right now. You know, like,
right.
There's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 4 Marathon.
I was working full-time on top of being a full-time student, and I...
Listen, I don't want to hear your excuses, okay? I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening, and...
A great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Organians on Enterprise.
Part of what this episode of Enterprise is about for me is it's the search for the Organian society to find compassion again.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Griff Bull and the X-Files, Bad Blood.
It's actually kind of odd because the audience can piece together the narrative flow better than, you know, their boss.
That's because their boss didn't have the brilliant direction of Cliff Bull to observe.
Literary Treks.
Greg Cox, No Time Like the Past.
The one thing I had to be very careful of, and this was another sort of potential minefield that I had to navigate, was nobody in Kirk's time knows who the Borg are. So she can't, like, oh, hi, I'm 7 of 9. I'm a former Borg. You know, they don't know the Borg. She has to be careful not to tell them the Borg.
And introducing Continuing Mission, our newest show all about fan series and independent productions.
Star Trek continues with Doug Drexler.
Everybody who does a Star Trek show in CG, the first thing they do is make the ship 947 feet long. Well, there's no way it's going to look the same because the ship that they shot on television wasn't 2,000 feet long. It was 11 feet long.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So go grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. Matthew, since we last recorded, we received some very nice feedback from listener Chris Baca. What did Chris have to say?
You know, Chris, he said that I think that this is one of the best shows on Trek FM. I have gone back to listen to the first 20 episodes and just listened to the character profile shows you did, and they're really well done. Really great analysis on how all the characters interact and affect one another. I'm really starting to get back into Deep Space Nine, and I put it on my rewatch as a series list and just started to binge watch on Netflix. And so... says, keep up the great work, guys. Chris, we really appreciate that. Like you, we do love Deep Space Nine. I'm glad that you really enjoyed our character profiles. Those have been a lot of fun to do. We still have plenty of characters that we can talk about on Deep Space Nine as well, so we're excited to do that with you and send those out for you later to listen to. So appreciate the support. Without you, you know, this really isn't worth doing. So thank you very much.
Definitely. And Chris also sent us another message and asked a couple of things in that message. One is he asked, have you done any shows on Kaiwyn? And no, we haven't done our Kaiwyn show yet, but we've definitely been talking about it. And that'll be coming up at some point. We really want to dig into Kaiwyn because we hate her, right, Matthew? But
yes,
we love the character. It's really a brilliantly written character.
It's amazing that Nurse Ratched would show up on Deep Space Nine.
Right. And also, Chris asked if we've ever done the Circle Trilogy here on the Orb.
And Chris, that isn't something that we have done on the show, but I think that it'll be something that we definitely do. As we've been going through the last series of Deep Space Nine, I think that there are a few of those different arcs that we might cover in detail. And that actually, Chris, is a great idea for us to be able to do. So I really appreciate the idea. I'm excited to go through that series because it's really something that I think as a series was progressing, Deep Space Nine was progressing, it really set Deep Space Nine apart that they would do a big 3-part episode.
Oh, definitely. It was really unique at the time that it came out. Now, we have done the Circle Trilogy before on the Ready Room. I don't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but if you go to the website and you search for the Circle Trilogy, you'll find it there. I think it's one of the earlier episodes, The Ready Room. So you can check that out if you're interested as well. But Chris, thank you so much for your feedback. We really love hearing from you. Thank you for the kind words. And for everyone else, if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and also on Twitter under username Trek FM, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek. Now, Matthew, when you're not just standing in the corridor, gazing longingly at Dax in her 23rd century dress, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me at MattRushing02 on Twitter, tweeting about all sorts of different things. You can also find me doing literary treks with you, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek. We've also been going through the Deep Space Nine relaunch slowly, talking to authors, and talking to Drew about funny comics. So join us there if you enjoy that or would just like to be introduced to the literary universe. We have a great time there. And I also have my own blog, Chris, at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not sitting in a bar looking longingly at the scantily clad waitress wondering whether or not to order Klingon Ractigino, where can we join you?
Well, yeah, I'll be sitting there, but I'll be thinking, when is she going to leave and when is Lieutenant Whatley going to come in?
Good choice.
You can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username. And also on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, of course, Matthew, as you said, I do literary treks with you. You can also find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. You can find me on my interview show, Matterstream. And also you can find me on my new show called Continuing Mission, which is a look at the fan series and independent productions of Star Trek. The first episode is out now. I'm joined by Doug Trexler for a really, really fun chat about designing Star Trek Continues, the CGI on that show, but all sorts of Star Trek things as well. And for DS9 fans, we spend a good 10, 12 minutes talking about designing the new Deep Space Nine that first appeared in the fall novel series in Revelation and Dust. So check that out if you're interested. And then I also do the Ready Room every week with hosts from all across the network and special guests. And we talk about Star Trek news and all five live action Star Trek series on that show. And the current episode that's out this week as we're recording this is about the DS9 episode Civil Defense. So go check that out as well. Before we let you go, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. Audible helps us bring The Orb to you every week. They're the best source of audiobooks you're going to find online. They have over 150,000 titles for you to choose from. All sorts of genres, current releases and bestsellers. Also, lots of Star Trek books. They have a few DS9 books there as well. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. If you go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up, you can choose any book you like. And if you decide not to stick with Audible after the trial, you get to keep that audiobook. So there's nothing to lose. But by trying Audible, you'll be helping us keep the show coming to you every week. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we really thank Audible for their support of the network. One more thing you can do to help us keep The Orb coming to you is to make a donation to the network. The shows are free for you to download, of course, but they're not free for us to produce. It costs quite a bit for us to produce the shows, to host them, to get them out to you. We use a lot of bandwidth for the network, and you can support us by making a small donation, and we have illustrated aliens for you as a thank you, available as badges or art prints. If you go over to trek.fm/donate, you'll find all of those. Choose a contribution level that's right for you, and we really thank you for your support and helping us keep the network going.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.